we sometimes limit ourselves and get in our own ways. But if we only just take those steps, if we dream big, take the steps, and push towards our goal, that really we can do anything. And we can't allow anything or anybody to define us. We define what we want to be, and we create our futures.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the first season of You Run Like a Girl, the podcast that shines a spotlight on women and girls in sport. My name's Amita, and I'm so excited to have you here listening today. Now, I say it's the first season, but it's sort of like the first season 2.0. Some of you may know that I soft launched the show a few years ago, but soon after I was sidelined by major surgery. After taking a few months to recover, I ended up going back to school, switching jobs, and then COVID hit. It was just one thing after another, but I never gave up my dream of wanting to highlight sports stories we don't usually hear in mainstream media. So despite my previous setbacks, I got back on the horse and decided to give it another try. Second chances and staying open to opportunities are something my first guest is all too familiar with. Simi Dele Adeagbo, better known as Simi to her friends and family, is a Nigerian-Canadian skeleton athlete. In 2018, she became the first athlete to represent Nigeria at the Olympic Games in the sport of skeleton. But that hadn't always been her plan. Growing up, Simi excelled in track and field, eventually competing at the NCAA level in the triple jump. When she came up just shy of a spot for the 2008 Summer Olympic team, she hung up her shoes and embarked on a successful career in marketing. But as you'll soon hear, life had other plans. I spoke with Simi when she was training in Lake Placid, just one race away from making the Olympic team. Although this interview is from a few years ago, the lessons you can learn from Simi's journey are timeless. Simi, thank you so much for joining me today. I always like to start right at the beginning. So where were you born and where did you grow up?
I actually was born in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. But my parents were studying there. So I just happened to be born while they were there on some studies. And then a couple months after I was born, I went back to Nigeria with them. So my name, Simidele, actually means accompany me home in the Nigerian Yoruba language, because I was accompanying them home to Nigeria. Once I got back to Nigeria, I lived there until I was 6 years old, and then just spent the rest of my childhood kind of between the U.S. and Canada.
And were sports a part of your childhood growing up? Like, were your parents involved in sports, or did you have any siblings that played any sports?
Yeah, we are an athletic family, and I've been a lifelong athlete from as long as I can remember. Sport has been a part of my life. I think my formative memory is when I was in elementary school, kind of starting there with, field days and things like that that weren't quite as structured. And then from there, kind of moving into more structured softball teams or tennis lessons and things like that. And then by the time I got to high school, I kind of started focusing in on track and field and became kind of really good at that and excelling in that. And then I did that through college as well, track and field. So sports has always been part of my life. And I have three other siblings. There's four of us. All of us played sports throughout our childhood, but also on the college level. And my parents also claim that they were athletes back in Nigeria, but we're still looking for the evidence on that.
Okay, so apart from participating in tons of sports as a young kid, were you inspired by any athletes growing up?
Yeah, definitely. I was really, really inspired by female athletes in general. The one that really sticks out to me, though, I had posters of them in my room, were Venus and Serena Williams. And they're actually around my age, so they're actually my peers. But at that time, they were just everything. They were just entering the sport. I don't think I really understood back then kind of the barriers they were breaking for that sport. But I just really just loved them. I just thought that what they were doing was so cool. Their look was cool. The beads that they used to wear back then. And that's actually what's inspired kind of my competition and race look. I have my hair braided, and I usually wear some kind of beads on my braids. And that really just pays homage to that legacy that they left. The fact that they broke barriers many years ago in their sport. And I feel that I'm doing the same thing in my sport today.
Amazing. Now, you had quite an impressive track and field career during university in the States. Could you tell me a bit about that and also about your decision to continue competing after you graduated and how you balanced your athletic pursuits with a regular career?
Yeah, so I went to the University of Kentucky, and there I was what they call a four-time All-American. And that's the highest honor that you can get. All-American honors are the highest honors that you can get in collegiate athletics in the U.S. It just means you have placed in the top eight in the country for collegiate athletes. So that was really awesome. I still have records that stand today at university. So I had a really successful university career, and I knew that I didn't want it to end there. And for me, I always had the goal, the dream of someday getting to the Olympics. And so I wanted to pursue that further through athletics, through the triple jump. So after I finished university, I looked for opportunities to continue my training. I looked into different coaches and who I could train with. Ultimately, though, it was a really tough time because you know, track and field is not a sport where a lot of people can make that their full-time focus. So I had to find that balance and figure out how I was going to make it work with my job and everything. So I ended up moving to Portland, Oregon to start my career in marketing. And I ended up finding a coach, and I worked with him for a few years. But right around 2006, I decided, you know, this is not quite working as well as I hoped that it would in terms of working full time. There was a lot of demand on me for my job, and then also being able to train full time. It was really tough, and I had this goal of making the 2008 Olympics. So I had to kind of reassess and figure out what situation was going to be best for me to accomplish that goal of making the Olympics. And then I made the decision, and I was invited to train at the U.S. Olympic Training Center in California. Yeah, and I got a great coach there as well, who's also an Olympian, gold medalist, Al Joyner. A lot of people know the Joyner family from track and field, and so he's awesome, and he invited me down to train with him. And so I made that decision in 2006. And again, I really wasn't sure how it was going to work, because although training at the training center is awesome, how do I live and make a living? And for me, I always have kind of found a way to balance both, because I think both are important. I always wanted to continue my growth and development in my career, and I didn't see that as having to be separate from continuing to grow and pursue my athletic endeavors. So when I got the opportunity to train at the Olympic Training Center, what I did was just propose a plan to my company, the company I was working for, just to say, hey, this is how I see this working. I think this can be possible, and we just have to kind of think about how we approach it in a very unorthodox way. And the senior leadership, they took on my proposal and supported me in that two-year training period from 2006 to 2008. And I worked flexible working hours and got my job done while training up to 6-7 hours a day at the training center. It was really a great opportunity. And then when I got to the 2008 Olympic trials, I really gave it my best effort. I had a massive personal best just unfortunately missed making the team just by a hair. But I had absolutely no regrets, because I felt that I had given it my absolute all and did everything that I could. So, long answer. I hope that wasn't too long of an answer, but I wanted to really tell the full story. So that was really after the 2008 Olympic trials. That was kind of the end of my athletic story as I knew it, and I had kind of moved on with my life and thought, you know, hey, I've given it my best shot, and I can move on to other things in my life, including new career opportunities. So then in 2013, I got a career opportunity to move to South Africa. And it was a great personal and professional opportunity because I was just looking for some change in my life. And I thought, wow, that would be really cool to have that experience of working and living in a different country. So I made the move over there and been there the last 4.5 years, doing my job, doing my life, all of that. And then a very unexpected opportunity in athletics came up in the form of skeleton.
Simi, this is the part of your story that I love the most and that I hope inspires others to believe that you never know what can happen in life. You know, you'd given your track and field career your all and you'd happily moved on. And then years later, you get this incredible chance to realize your Olympic dream, not in your original sport, but in the sport of skeleton. How did that happen?
Yeah, so what happened was in December of 2016, I came across an article about the Nigerian bobsled team. And the article kind of just featured the three ladies that are part of the team and spoke about this really audacious goal that they had, which was becoming the first bobsled team from Africa to ever go to an Olympics. And I just really thought that that was very cool. And I was like, wow, that's really inspiring. And I immediately was interested and wanted to be a part of it. Now, it didn't seem too foreign to me because there is a history of track athletes going from track into bobsled. So I just thought, oh, okay, this is something to look into. But what grabbed me was really just kind of the historic nature of the feat. I thought, wow, what a great way to leave a legacy, break barriers in winter sport, and just kind of have a significant contribution to sport in Africa and be able to move it forward. So I got in contact with the ladies and found out that actually, because initially I thought that bobsled maybe was a four-man sport, and I've now gotten to know it's not for women. For women, it's still two-man. So they had the team already kind of in place with the ladies that were already there. And so I kept in touch with them here and there, and I got to find out that in August 2017, they were holding a tryout in Houston, Texas. And so I thought to myself, you know, maybe I should go. And I really wasn't sure. I wrestled with it and I made the decision. And like 2 weeks before the tryout, I bought my ticket and said, you know, I'll never know if I don't go. So I made a very long trip from South Africa, a 22-hour flight, and did the tryout and came back and wasn't really sure what to expect. And then I got a call a couple weeks after that, inviting me back to a camp in Canada in September. That was the first time that I was really exposed to the sport, bobsled and skeleton. That was the first time I touched a skeleton sled. I touched a skeleton sled for the first time on September 12th of 2017. So anyways, that week just exposed me to the sport. I got to know the sport a little bit better. And by the end of the week, I said, skeleton is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to join them in having an audacious goal. And I'm going to become the first African female athlete to qualify for the sport of skeleton. So I set that goal very early on in the season. And every day I've been learning ever since and working toward it. And here I am, just one race away.
That's incredible. And so you had no knowledge or understanding of skeleton prior to this tryout?
It was completely new to me from August. I had never watched it before. I had no exposure to the sport. I had to really kind of do my research in the background and kind of Google and watch YouTube videos and to try to kind of start understanding it. But it's a sport that you really don't understand until you are really in it and start doing it. So I try to do as much research as possible and talk to different people. And I've been learning every day since. So, yeah, I had no prior exposure or experience in the sport. So, but what I've found, though, is that really my background suits me very well for the sport. A lot of skeleton athletes come from a track and field background as well. I think skeleton is a lesser-known sport in when you look at all of the sliding sports. People know more about bobsled, and that's why, you know, for me as well, I was like, oh, yeah, bobsled, you know, track athletes move into bobsled. But skeleton is also quite similar in terms of track athletes transitioning into the sport. And it's because the skills that you need to be successful in track are very similar to what you need to be successful in skeleton. Speed, power, strength, explosiveness, those help you a lot. And so I think I've been able to pick up the sport quickly. I mean, I still have a ways to go in terms of learning and, you know, being the best driver I can be. But things like the push start, for example, which is the first 30-meter sprint of the race, the first 30 meters of the race, I've really been able to pick that up quickly because my track and field background lends to that very well. And so I just transferred those skills. Where I'm really working on improving on is then what happens after 30 meters, because you still have a long ways to go, because the races are typically, the tracks are typically a kilometer or a kilometer and a half. So a lot of the time that you have to either get your downtime, your time faster, it's dependent on how smoothly you can navigate the track. And that's where experience really pays off. So I'm working on, you know, really improving that aspect of my race. But even there, I mean, my athletic background helps me. It's all about staying focused, staying relaxed. And those are things that you learn as an athlete.
Can you walk me through what your training routine looks like?
Yeah, you know, there's kind of two ways to train for the sport, and I do a mix of both. There's training on dry land, which is basically what I can actually do in South Africa, which is your traditional training in the gym, where you're looking just to build your strength and your power. So I can do that anywhere in the world. Also sprinting, you know, where I'm doing short sprint repeats and doing plyometrics, which is, you know, jumping on boxes. All of those things, you know, I can do wherever I am. And there's a time for that in the season. The difficult part, which is very challenging for the continent of Africa, is that you need to get on the ice at some point in time, especially when you're beginning the sport, because it's all about getting as much experience going down the track as possible. So you have to find ice, essentially. So, yes, I have to go to places like Calgary, Whistler, Park City. I've stayed in North America this season. I'm in Lake Placid now. But there's also some tracks in Europe, for example, and Asia as well. So you have to go to where the ice is to basically learn, you know, how to navigate the tracks and learn how to steer the sled and things like that.
Simi, your story is so unique because you were an elite athlete for so many years and then stopped to focus on a corporate marketing career, not knowing that you'd return to high-level sport one day. So was it hard to get back into competitive shape? And how much of a role did nutrition play in that process?
You know, what's interesting is that I had already kind of started to do that before skeleton came into my life. And that was just personally, I felt like, you know, I want my track body back. And so that process had kind of organically started. And I'm glad because it set me up, you know, for success as I've entered this new sport. But nutrition is massively important. I've always taken it very seriously as an athlete. You know, you can train all day, but what you're putting inside your body makes a huge difference. It can help you recover better, and just in terms of, you know, aesthetically as well. A lot of six packs are made in the kitchen. and then also too, I've gotten to know a lot more about, you know, clean eating, and, you know, not having a lot of preservatives and extra sugars and stuff. And so I've now started reading more food labels and really understanding what am I putting inside of my body. So, I really take nutrition seriously and consider it an important component of my training. I can train all day, but if I'm not eating right or well, that diminishes, part of my training.
A lot of athletes use music to help them get in the zone. So do you have any go-to artists or playlists that help you train or compete?
Yeah, I actually do. I enjoy listening to music. I think this started right about at the tryouts in Houston, where I just kind of decided that day I was going to play some Nigerian music. There's a very popular artist called Davido, that's like a hip hop kind of Afrobeat Nigerian artist, and so I was just playing his song, and that got me pumped up that day. And since then, I've just kind of gone back to that particular mix. It's him and some other guys who are on this mix, and it's all kind of similar music, which is Afrobeat, hip hop fused. And that, I think, just really like reminds me when I'm in this environment, in these freezing temperatures, sometimes it's like, ugh, you know, do I really feel like doing this today? But that it's really not about me, you know, and that listening to those songs and those Afro beats reminds me that the bigger significance of this whole journey, and that this is for Nigeria and this is for the continent. And it kind of grounds me and reminds me of the bigger purpose of this. So, and plus, I enjoy dancing to it. So
much of being an athlete is learning to build resilience and dealing with setbacks. So have you had any challenges or obstacles that you've had to overcome during your training?
There's setbacks every day, you know. That's the interesting thing about the sport. But I tried to look at the setbacks as setups, because you learn. And this is something I've tried to really share as part of my story. The sport of skeleton really teaches you a lot. You get bruised up, banged up. And there's times where you feel like, why am I doing this? Because you're in pain. Like, you know, when you're flying at such high speeds and you hit a wall, it can really hurt, you know. Luckily, I haven't had any major things that injuries of like that have set me, you know, out of the sport for weeks. But they are painful. And then also, too, I think just when you're getting into a new sport, especially one that's as foreign as this, and I say foreign just because for anybody coming into the sport, there's just so much to learn. It can be so overwhelming. And there's days where sometimes you question, like, what have I gotten myself into? Can I really do this? You know, but I've just kind of just tried to keep pushing. That's what I always tell myself, keep pushing. That's literally and figuratively. So whenever I encounter any challenges, I just try to keep pushing past it.
Simi, what does it mean to you to be on the cusp of achieving not only your Olympic dream, but also hitting such an historic milestone for Nigeria?
I think that, I'm just starting to really grasp kind of how amazing it's going to be. I mean, I knew it obviously from the beginning, and that's why I set the goal for myself, and I just really wanted to be a part of this historic feat. But I think it's going to mean so much, not only for me personally, but the country. It's going to be a moment where people are going to be inspired and see sport in a different way. specifically the next generation of African athletes and athletes around the globe, actually. It's not just limited to Africa. I hope that people see this accomplishment and see it as a point of inspiration that anything is possible, and that we sometimes limit ourselves and get in our own ways. But if we only just take those steps, if we dream big, take the steps, and push towards our goal, that really we can do anything. And we can't allow anything or anybody to define us. We define what we want to be, and we create our futures. So it's going to be really, really a very significant moment.
Simi, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been such an inspirational chat. I only have one more question, and it's around advice. So I'm curious, do you have any advice for young girls hoping to pursue a sport at a high level?
Yeah, I think, first of all, they have to just take the first step. As I just mentioned, I think a lot of times we just don't take that first step. But we have to be brave enough to do that. And then that step leads to another step, and that step leads to another step. But we have to be just relentless with our pursuit of our dreams and believe that they can happen. Faith has been a really important part of my journey. And I think that sometimes we don't have enough faith in ourselves, faith in God, faith in the possibility of whatever our goals are. So I think you just have to have faith, but faith without actions is dead. So I would just encourage girls out there to just believe in their dreams and take the necessary actions to work toward them.
Thanks so much for listening. Before you go, a quick reminder that new episodes are dropping the rest of the summer on Tuesdays and will be available wherever you stream your podcasts. For exclusive content and to be added to our mailing list, please visit YouRunLikeAGirlPodcast.com. I believe that if you can see it, you can be it. So whether you want to make an impact on the basketball court or in the boardroom, or better yet both, I hope these stories inspire and motivate you to keep chasing your dreams. Let's get it!